Are you going to come out to the garden?
Oh, sorry. I must have nodded off. Here I come.
Here's your shovel. Start planting.
What's this? A day timer? 21:26. Not again. Okay, looks like an office lobby. Oh, it's Consolidated International.
What are we doing here?
When are we doing here?
Let's see. Receptionist behind a high curved oak desk. Big brass corporate logo. Ficus trees sprinkled liberally around the lobby.
Glass coffee table. Look, AOL CDs, 500 free hours, and a magazine, Time. Will Microsoft overwhelm Netscape? September 1996.
Well, we know how that one turned out.
I don't think I've ever seen you in a suit. Where'd you get the tie? I have one just like it.
Hey, Eli Macarena.
Did you have something to do with this?
I'll never tell.
Excuse me. Are you here to see Mr. Hindenburg? I'll need you to sign in, please.
Certainly.
What are you doing?
I'm playing along. Wow, been quite a parade through here today. Let's see, we have a telecom, a retailer, transportation, all here to see Mr. Hindenburg.
He's new. Just got assigned to be the warehouse manager for data.
That explains a lot.
I didn't think you would be arriving for another half hour.
I'm sorry about that. I guess getting here was easier than we expected.
Just a moment. I'll check and see if he can see you early.
Thank you. We'll just wait over here.
Mr. Hindenburg, the consultants are here to see you.
You know what this means.
I sure do. We're back at the beginning. The fever was just getting started.
I remember. We had just built our data warehouse. It was one of the biggest at the time. It took up half a server room. Now my phone has more compute power and storage.
What if we could correct the mistakes? Convince companies to care about managing their data and not just shoveling it.
John, Mark?
Over here.
Pleased to meet you, Marvin Hindenburg.
I'm John Latley.
And Mark Cooper. Thanks for seeing us early.
It's no problem. I've been in meetings all day. You're the last one. I'm coming over to the conference room.
Your receptionist mentioned you've just started a data warehouse group.
That's right. Please have a seat. Marketing wants reports. They've already started meeting with the operational systems to get a data feed.
I hope they said no.
That's how this project got started. Apparently, all anyone talked about at CIO camp this year were data warehouses. Marketing is our first partner. We're calling the project Customer 360.
Catchy.
Our database vendor set up some meetings, and I'm drinking from a fire hose here. But I think the picture is starting to come together.
I have no doubt we can help you. But what you're going to hear from us is very different from what everyone else would be saying.
John's always been a talented futurist, and we have unique experience.
I'm intrigued.
The first thing you have to understand is that it all starts with people. You're going to want to dive directly into the tech, data feeds, repositories, but trust me, it's the people parts that will make all the difference.
20 minutes later.
You emphasize understanding your data, ensuring that it contains what it's supposed to contain, and establish a culture of trust in the data. We guarantee that the rest will go so much more smoothly.
Consolidated International will be a cutting-edge data and analytics leader, not just now, but 20 years, and especially 30 years from now.
What's happening in 30 years?
Doesn't matter. Whatever happens, you'll be ready to take advantage of it.
I see what you mean. You've given me a lot to think about.
We've given you the golden ticket. All you have to do is redeem it.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We'll see ourselves out.
Good day.
How did it go?
He seemed receptive, but we'll see.
The resistance to managing data properly never changes.
So, Moose, what do we do now?
Meet me at the street. I'll be there in a minute.
Okay, I'll get the door. Oh, Excuse me.
Pardon us.
No problem.
You seem to be in a hurry.
More suits. That one necktie looks like the one I saw in the hole in Pittsburgh. What do you suppose Moose wants at the street?
Don't know.
What do you suppose those guys were in such a hurry for?
Don't know that either.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon. We're here from Big Five Consulting for Marvin Hindenburg.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Hindenburg has left for the day.
We have an appointment scheduled for now. We ran into traffic and had a hard time finding a parking spot.
You're right. You did have an appointment now. It's just that those two you passed on the way into the building arrived about a half hour ago. We thought they were you.
I don't see them out there now. I wonder who they are. Here's the sign-in sheet. John and Mark. No last names. From an outfit called the Sharing Foresight Group? Never heard of them. What could they know about data warehousing? Look, we're here until tomorrow morning. Can you squeeze us in with Martin then?
I'm afraid not. He's leaving tonight for meetings at the Denver office. He won't be back until the end of the week.
Okay, we'll have to catch him later. Maybe a conference call when he gets back.
Don't count on it.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
I wonder if Marvin is going to take the advice or just crash.
Don't say it. We will have to check back in on him sometime. But today we're talking with Sam Spencer, CEO and founder of Aristotle Metadata out of Australia. His company is focused on understanding data so that you can get more out of it. But those in Australia may have seen Sam in the news recently regarding some work he's been doing with the Australian government. We'll also hear from the 8-Bit Consultants and drop in on a sort of unusual data poetry slam. There's a lot to get to, so back to you, John, to kick things off.
Our cold open sketches this season has featured a timey-wimey theme. We're hopping around into various data scenarios across time. Most of us have often wished or wondered about changing things by going into the past. No matter what the sci-fi stories say, though, you really can't go back and change the past. At least not with current technologies, but we can learn from the past. This podcast talks a lot about data management, governance, and using data and AI, but none of what we're saying in this scenario is new. Humanity has a great track record of doing dumb things with new technology. The issues and missed expectations are all due to past situations experiencing things with other types of technologies. We see no difference. The promises of data and AI are being met with the harsh realities of poor content, poor quality, and leadership disengagement. This goes back to my late friend, Ken Orr, a masterful writer and commenter on technology in the 1970s and 80s. He said, new technologies have us develop bad stuff quicker than we've ever done before. And guess what? AI-generated code is developing bad systems even quicker than we could possibly imagine. And we're recalling all those coders we laid off, too. This begs the question, are we ever going to learn? I have children, and like many other parents, I give my children advice, and like many other parents, they've ignored the advice. And this is the same dynamic as not learning from history. But eventually, my kids have grown up, and they actually listen to their old man. And my daughter said the other day, that was great advice, thanks. I think it's time for this world of data and corporations and executives and boards of directors that want to use data and do great things with data to learn from the past, not ignore it. The basic nuts and bolts that go with applying new technology to new things. Again. I think it's time they remember lessons learned from Total Quality, Six Sigma, safety programs. None of this is rocket science. Our guest today has dealt with this scenario head on. I hope you enjoy his story. I think it's time that leadership of organizations grow up, get their heads out of old paradigms, and embrace the real aspects of data. Make the world better, not just speed up old processes. And in the meantime, be nice to each other.
John and I were at a recent DGIQ EDW conference, and a mutual friend told us that we needed to meet this guy from Australia. He's doing some interesting information management work with the government and would be great for the podcast. So a day or two later, we had a chance to sit down with Guy from Australia, and we definitely agreed. He has a great story and very impactful work in progress, so we are excited to welcome Sam Spencer, CEO and co-founder of Aristotle Metadata, to Rock Bottom.
Thank you for that introduction, Mark. Really happy to be the token Australian today.
Well, we really appreciate your flexibility, too, with the 14 and a half hour time difference or whatever we have here. Could you just tell us a little bit to start about your background? Because we find people coming into this business and the people we talk to coming from all different directions. So sure. How about your background?
My background, I'll give you the really short one that's really long, is like, I didn't know what I was going to do out of university. I thought my mum was a nurse, so I gave that a shot for a couple of years, realized that I just didn't want to help people one at a time. I wanted to help, you know, whole systems. So I kind of realized that I probably should have done computer science the whole time and dragged my way through university for that. And after far too many years at university, realized I needed a job. I was like, oh, well, I've got a stats degree. I'm going to work for the Bureau of Statistics in Australia. So I did that for a couple of years, and I just kind of fell into the world of metadata, data and data documentation and classification. And there are some people who just love classifying things, and I'm one of them. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is like technology. It's philosophy. This is what I enjoy. From there, I kind of bounced around the public sector, and I learned a little bit about, you know, ISO standards, and I just hit on this problem, which became Aristotle, which was, there was this ISO standard that didn't really have software built for it very much. And I thought, that's an industry, that's what I'm going to do. And that's kind of where it came from, is like, I just had this really big mixed diverse background of experiences. And I saw a need for data documentation, and I don't think I knew why. Like, I think I'm still learning why we're doing this, and I think I'm now just getting an idea of why it's so important for us to do this. But yeah, that's the abridged version that kind of launched me and Aristotle in my career. Yeah.
So not to get too deep into ISO, but what specifically was the ISO standard?
Well, my favorite ISO standard, because you have to have one, naturally, is, like, my favorite one is ISO 11179.
Oh, 11179. Listeners, we're geeking out right now. Everyone just strap in. Okay, go ahead.
This ISO standard, and it's actually really simple. Like, there were six sections. There's now, 15 sections, I think. But really, at its core, what it said is, like, if you want to think about data, what you want to know about every column or every field is, you want to know, what were you measuring about? What was the thing you were measuring, and how did you technically store it? It was a person, it was their date of birth, and we stored it as a US-based date, and that's what, 200 and something pages is condensed down to, is how do you think about data in a way that people can kind of talk about?
Okay. And before Mark picks back up here, I just want to interject to our listeners. ISO standards are fascinating. Ignore my comment about geeking out. We have a whole industry that we run around, with our shorts around our ankles a lot of the times about standard stuff. And most of them exist. They're out there. They're standardized. And you would not believe what we've standardized on. Having an awareness of that makes an awful lot of data management and data governance so much easier. So
I'm actually going to disagree. I'm going to use it. I know this is exactly what we were going to do.
Yeah.
As we talked about this at Dataversity, I'm actually going to disagree, because I think the geeking out is the problem, and I could, like, the ones that I know of are, you've got your ISO 11179, my favorite, the best metadata standard, which is a great way to start a fight at any data conference, right? You've got ISO 19115, which is great for geospatial data, and maps people will fight you on that. We've got our Dublin cores, and I think
wonderful stuff. I love the Dublin core.
And yeah. a really simple framework for understanding what people have. And I think the challenge is that we get caught down in the weeds of those, and that's where we focus. Is, you know, I say, well, I want this standard, and you say, well, I prefer this standard, and I think there's a really interesting philosophical kind of curiosity about why we standardize on particular things in particular areas. But at some point you just have to go, well, this is the one we're going to use. And that's where I think we struggle. And that's probably what, you know,
That's a fair point, but we have so many people that start from scratch. Was my point. I talked to someone the other day with 30 years experience in this business. They'd never heard of Dublin Core. And they're a metadata professional.
Wow. I think that just speaks to a lack of curiosity that I think we're seeing more of, especially with ChatGPT.
Very good.
If we do that thing, do you know about Darwin Core?
Oh, you got two people looking at you like Labrador retrievers right now.
Dublin Core wasn't good. So Dublin Core, for people who don't know, it's about 10 questions. You know, what is it? Where is it? Who is it? Those kind of things. Darwin Core was so. First of all, Dublin Core came out of Dublin, Ohio, which I didn't know.
Yes.
Darwin Core was an extension for biological sciences, where they went, well, we need 3 extra questions. And then they went and they did a whole standardization track around that. So there's so many out there. Like I would say to anybody who's listening is like, before you do anything, like be lazy and just go and see if somebody's done the hard work for you. And that's what I find with Aristotle is like, people are like, wow, this is a really, really interesting system. This is, you know, this is amazing. I said, the ISO standard was sitting on the shelf since the 1970s. Right. And, you know, before I was born, and I'm not going to say the year. But, you know, it's been sitting on the shelf since the 1970s, and nobody picked it up and went, this is a complete specification for a software tool. You know, I think there's been some bespoke, there are bespoke versions of it that some places have made, but I looked at it and I went, this is a product, and it was sitting there ready to go. And I think the same exists for so many of these standards, and I'd say to anybody who's interested in getting into that space is find a standard that nobody's built around. And there's an audience because there's people who are passionate about it.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I prefer ISO 25,000 myself, but then again, I also prefer Emacs. So it's, you know, there's no accounting for taste.
Can we just end the call?
Yeah,
Mark?
I guess that's going to be that. Yeah. Open up a whole new front on.
And then back to Mark, while John now feels again like the third odd guy out. Yeah. Okay.
So that leads us right into the first thing I really wanted to drill into. I guess the second thing after ISO, that that oftentimes we try to tiptoe around governance and we try to tread lightly. And if we're really gentle about it, then maybe they won't notice and we'll do it. And you seem to be taking the opposite approach. So tell us a little bit about that.
And you know, all apologies to Rob Siner, who I also had a chance to speak with there. I think he wrote like a really great book, Non-Invasive Data Governance, and there's so much in there that I've learned from. I think the best way to phrase what we're doing is extremely aggressive data governance or dynamic data governance, as I call it, is, and it came from my experience where, you know, I was always a tech guy and I started a company and I was like, well, I'm going to have to learn how to talk to, you know, other company heads. Like I left my original career quite junior. So I went, I'm going to go off and do an MBA. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and study an MBA. And it was really interesting, right? I think the tech industry has a really big distaste for MBAs. And you know it because they use it as a noun, right? Like you don't, an MBA isn't a degree. It's a kind of person. You can visualize them. So I wonder why are they doing what they're doing? And it's interesting because there's a lot of talk in MBAs about strategy and organizational power, right? And I think they also skirt around the fact that organizations have org charts for a reason. Like we have institutional power, like you can do things, right? And I think that's something that we've under-recognized in the data community. And I think that that's an area for, you know, exploration, right? I will say, like, I'm not sure that I'm right. And my very active experiment with the Australian government at the moment will be the evidence of that, and it fills me with dread every day waiting for the results of that to come through. But I think we have to try something new to show senior executives and CEOs why this isn't nice to have. Like, you have to do data governance. It's part of your job.
Yeah. I guess you could call it assertive governance.
Well, I think it's, to contrast with, and again, like, this isn't to discredit everything that he's done, because the book is fantastic for people who are looking to get into the industry, is I think communication requires multiple styles. Like, and I think, it's the carrot and the stick approach. Like, you want to lead people along, you want to bring them along the journey, right? And I think that is a more effective communication strategy, right? I think it is more effective to help people understand why it's in their interest to do something. And I think Rob has spoken to that at great length, right? And I don't think there's a better book out there. But I think and the reason why I'm interested in our approach is probably because when we were selling tools, we'd go, well, we want to bring in a tool that will help you do this better. And people are like, well, we can't get investment. Like, executives aren't interested in this. They don't realize the problem. And I think that's where, you need a second approach. Like, it's the carrot and the stick. You know, you sometimes you have to tell people, like, this is your job. And I have a very fun story from my nursing career where, I'll just use this as a segue into it. So a fun story from my career was I used to be an orderly, like, while I was going through my nursing degree, and I'd clean beds. And because I was a very bored young man, I would strip the bed and I'd bundle all the sheets up and I'd put it into a ball and I'd throw it in the basket, about 2 meters away, right? And it was fun. Like, it was a great way to pass the shifts. When your job for 8 hours is just stripping beds and cleaning them, it passes the time. And I still remember there was one time about 15, 20 years ago, I was cleaning a bed and an infectious diseases specialist came over and nearly grabbed me by the shirt. And they're like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm cleaning the beds. This is my job. I clean the beds. I wipe it with antiseptic. I make sure everything's clean. And she said, do you know what you've just done? Right. And I go, no, I'm just doing it. Right. She goes, you've just thrown pathogens through the air. Every time you do that, any potential diseases, dead skin cells that had infectious materials on, when you threw that through the air, you were throwing those skin cells through the air. They could float in the air for hours, and they could infect anybody in this ward. And I was petrified, right? And she said, don't do it again. And I never did. And it speaks to the volume of why that incident was so important. It was because I still think about it. I still remember it as an example. Is she wasn't being mean. She wasn't using her power because she was, she wasn't doing the wrong thing. She was saying, you are doing something that is potentially hazardous to yourself and others. You can't do this anymore. And I think that there is room for us in data governance to say, if you're not documenting your data, you're putting us and our clients at risk, and we need you to not do that anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are times when you got to say, don't throw the stuff into the basket. I had a, I can add to this conversation briefly here. I had a talk with Bob several years ago because someone had said, actually the Dama in the exam had said, do you do data governance Siner's way or Ladley's way, A, B, C, D, or, and it's like, that's totally an incorrect interpretation of both approaches. And I asked Bob, when do you not do something non-invasive? And he said, when it doesn't work, when I've got to be invasive. There you go. You have to use your head. You have to use your head. Because you're talking about this medical background, and I have a very intelligent daughter who has found herself in the data governance field through the medical profession. And through her work as with some statistics and some analysis of medical data, would find herself visiting the nurses' stations and saying, don't do this. And And it became apparent to me that it was a very aggressive form of data governance. And her situation was, you put these numbers in because a doctor told you that it didn't matter. Well, it did matter. And the infant mortality rate in your county is twice as high as the rest of the state. So serious stuff, much like your example with the bedding there. So looking through your approach, and you can talk about your approach a little bit here. Now, it's very similar to me to like it is quality improvement. Something's broken. We're going to fix it. Right.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
Sure. So I'll talk a little bit about the approach, and I'll talk about what I've been doing to kind of, you know, shore this up. Because, you know, like yourself and like Mark and like a lot of others in the community, I'm like, I'm going to write a book too. I'm going to give that a shot. But it needs to come from a position of evidence, right? And as I said, like, I'm really, really lazy. Like, I think when you invent something really brand new, it's really hard for people to want to do. And then that's what we're seeing with this, right? So what I was doing earlier this year was, you know, through the MBA, they talk about assets and asset management and value, right? From a real dollars perspective, like they talk about assets in a very particular way. If you talk to an accountant, they talk about an asset on a balance sheet in a very particular way. And, you know, we talk about data as an asset. And I wanted to kind of look to, you know, some other ISO standards, like I think that are a really great research. And I was like, what do we do in asset management? Like in traditional physical asset management, what do we do? So it was looking at areas like asset management and health and safety to understand how they approach these kind of problems and how they approach governance, right? So I think some of the things I'll talk about, I think over time we might see influencing how we think about governance in general. For now, you know, if I can change the data world, that's good enough. But what you see in healthcare and health and safety and even in physical assets is we acknowledge that there has to be a manual component, right? And the example that I give there is when you think of like laptop provisioning, you know, you join a job and you get a laptop, everything's kind of automatically set up for you, except for all the things behind the scenes that somebody had to manually do to make that work, right? When your laptop was created at the factory and shipped to your organization, it didn't have, you know, property of Aristotle metadata sticker on it. Someone had to do that. Someone had to go to a system and go, I'm going to, you know, make an identifier. I'm going to print out an ID sticker and I'm going to put it on the laptop so we know what it is and we can track it. And we actually we're actually learning a lot of this as we build the company, as we got to a point where we were like, you know, for security standards, we had to know what laptops were where and how we got rid of them. So we had to build, you know, an asset management sheet, you know, an asset management SharePoint list, because that's what you do. If you don't know what you do, you just make a SharePoint list. And all of a sudden we were printing stickers and I'm going, you can't automate this. Like you can't automate the printing of a sticker and putting it on a laptop. You can't automate, you know, a security audit. Like you can't automate a health and safety report. Like somebody has to kickstart that process. And that's where a lot of it I think comes from for data is like, I think we fail to acknowledge that someone makes a decision to collect data, right? Someone made a decision to buy a laptop. Someone made a decision to collect data. What are they doing to keep the organization informed? Because every time I buy a laptop, I put a sticker on it. Every time I give it to someone, I record their name. And when they return it, you know, I say where it is, and so that I know that I can give it to someone else or I have to dispose of it. And I think that, you know, we over-rely on automation in data without realizing that the best way of automating something across an organization is to take what takes one person 2 hours and get everybody to do 1 minute of that.
Very good. I wanted to just rattle around a little bit there with that. You talk about the manual component and when we talk to leadership, when you say asset, they're thinking, oh, they're thinking things like, oh, someone's going to put a sticker on it. It's going to sit on a shelf. We're going to count it once in a while. That's the way the business language is. And when we say data is an asset, they go to a point of, well, it's an asset, but when do they put the stickers on it? Where do we count it on a shelf? Their vision, I agree with you. that their vision is that of an of when you say asset, they've got an accounting kind of thing going on. But this is data. And to me, I think that's when we lose them. That
yeah.
Even if you're using the right language, and you know, as a data technical person, I know that I'm talking about real asset management. They're not going to see that. They're not drawing, they're not connecting the dots. How do you address that? What's your thinking on talking to leadership along those lines? Oh,
well, I think, and that kind of goes to my current very active experiment is like, I think, we, at some point we need to stop thinking about the nerd stuff and start talking about what things are and who's responsible for them. Right. And this was something that I presented at Dataversity, and I know we had a fun conversation about on the deck, as well as I think, and I've softened my approach since then. I think I did say data domains are dead, but I think it's data domains are interesting, but not the most important thing, right? I think we need to start assigning ownership to the people who are, you know, purchasing the assets, right? I think that's probably one of the first things that I think we need to get comfortable with is someone is bidding for a budget to do an activity. Like IT has all of the money, but somebody goes to them and says, of that money, what I'd like is I'd like you to provision me or provide me with a number of services or a piece of software or some subscriptions, right? Someone from finance says, you know, to the CEO, I need $1 million a year for my SAP subscription. Like they've asked for that funding. Like they own that, right? That they're responsible for it, right? And I think starting to pin that responsibility within the org chart and saying, if you're asking for money, and that money is going to the collection of data, whether it's the system or paying for the people who are collecting that data, right? You think about a call center, like somebody who runs a call center buys a piece of software, but they're paying for people all around the clock to answer phone calls, to do data entry. They're paying a lot of money for that data to be collected so they can report on their job. So I think, you know, we need to look at that holistically and say, who in the org chart actually has responsibility for that? And then showing them what they're actually doing and showing them what's actually going on in there.
Do you think leadership is receptive to that type of conversation? And if yes, why? And if not, why?
Well, we're about to find out. Like we're finding out right now. So one of the things I've been doing is this dashboard, right? And there's a link on my Substack, and we'll probably put it somewhere in the podcast. But one of the things I was doing,
I'm making a note right now. I'm putting it in the process. We're so, on this. We are so on top of this stuff. Okay.
We're all professionals, John. We all know.
Yes, we are.
Just edit this bit out. Or don't. Like, I don't mind. Like, I think.
Oh, no. These are the ones we leave in, baby.
Yeah.
Like, you learn so much about starting a, like, build what a company is by building one. Like, just building it, you get to see what they do.
Preaching right to the choir on that one. Oh, my goodness. You think, you know, I had a career counselor tell me, you know, you really shouldn't work for anybody. You're not housebroken. You're really not wired, right? Man. And I said, okay. So I went out and started a company like the next day, like, and I'm starting a company, and someone says, what's your company doing? Oh, I don't know yet, but I'm starting a company. I still have one business card left, Three Square Consulting, because that's how I was generating three square meals a day. In the next 6 months, I cannot tell you how much I learned. Oh, holy cow. Right. I mean, this is why we love our podcast. We can digress. Sam, what you learned starting this company, I mean, pretty amazing, right?
It's cool. So with your like, you know, thing about, they're like, you're just not cut out for this. My last performance review when I left the public service was not leadership material, in quotes. And somebody said,
I love it.
The title of my biography.
Yeah.
And I think they were right. Like, I used to have a chip on my shoulder about not being able to progress in the public service because I never left the public service. I think I'm still a public servant at heart. I like doing things that generate a really positive outcome. It's just really advantageous that I can make money doing it. But I think, you know, sometimes you need people who can step outside and kind of rabble raise. So, but yeah, you learn where all this stuff comes from. Like, you just assume things. Like, and I think to the point of governance is, one of the challenges is when you're in a big organization, you just get handed the manual. Like you, and you just have to make refinements, right? Like you just, that's what you get, is you just get given the handbook and just say, well, this is what we do, right? And if you're in an organization that works well, then that's fantastic. But, you know, if you're in an organization that doesn't work well, then you've got problems. So that was why I really resonated with what Rob was saying is, you know, in his non-invasive data governance, he says everybody has governance. Mm-hmm. And I immediately looked at what we're doing. And if we don't, if at Aristotle, we don't know what the answer is or what we're supposed to do, the answer is ask Sam. And I'm like, that's governance. Like, you know, and that's what we're trying to fix is go, well, how do we not have to do that? You know, Sam has podcasts to do. How can we kind of continue to do the business? So yeah, it's when you build a business, you learn a lot about what you need to do to do things. Cause, and this will come directly to like, well, this is the good segues. My biggest concern is always just knowing that the right things are happening. And as a company grows and you're doing more things, you don't know what's happening. And I think that's probably what governance is the confidence to know that you're doing the right thing at all levels all the time. Like, and I hope you get the transcript of that because, that's what it is. Is like, for me, it's like, are we keeping the clients happy? Did you respond in 2 hours? Like, you know, how do I know that you responded in 2 hours? You know, how many bugs did we have this month? You know, how many downtime issues did we have? Hopefully zero. You know, because those are the things that make me feel comfortable when I'm offline or at conferences. If somebody goes, Sam, you know, we had zero, you know, tricky client support tickets this week. I'm like, okay, fantastic. Good to know we're across that. Right.
We're getting into another level of governance that I'm not sure there's been enough conversation about because, you know, we can look at, you know, how many tickets did you have? How many tickets took longer than 2 hours to resolve? So there's all those metrics and we can have those, we can look at them, but how often do we ask the question, are those the right metrics?
Oh yeah. So we had, our fun one was, this year we built our first dashboard. We built our first dashboard to start doing that. And, I was like, we need a number. We need something that we want to do. And I said, let's go for users. Like, because it's really embarrassing when somebody's like, how many people use your software? And you're like, I don't know, lots, right? It's not good. So first of all, we had to differentiate between clients, you know, organizations paying for the software and users. And we realized that because we don't have a lot of telemetry in the tool by design for privacy reasons, we couldn't quite get users well enough. And we actually started to spiral where I was just like, let's count the number of times somebody logs in a month, right? That's good enough. We'll get that, right? That's going to give us a number. And I said, what we're going to do is we're going to increase that number by 50% over the next 6 months, right? And the immediate thing we did was we started arguing about what user meant, like what that meant. And eventually I'm like, okay, it's the end of January. I want us to know that we're increasing this. We're going with number of times someone logs in, right? Or, you know, how many people have logged in during that month. The challenge with that is if you log in every 2 weeks, you don't have to log in again because of cookies, right? So you log in once and as long as you keep using the tool, we never count you again. And I just said, well, that means we'll just fix that in February and the number goes up. We'll just improve how we measure it, right? Or if we're measuring consistently, even if it's not quite the right measurement, as long as it's going up, then we're still doing the right thing, right? So that's where I think we kind of just eventually, like, we need to kind of go, this is the number, we're going to count it and we're going to move forward. And if we have to adjust the number, that's fine. Or if we, you know, if we have to talk about why the number has changed, then that's fine as well.
We'll be back with the conclusion of our interview with Sam Spencer in the next episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed. But first,
a big thank you to our supporter, Dataversity. Find them at dataversity.net. While you're there, use ROCK15 to get a discount on live training, on-demand training, content, lots of good stuff to download. You need to go somewhere for data education. It's Dataversity.
Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. In the last episode, I asked you to imagine AI generating the foundational data governance artifacts for us. If you haven't yet, take a minute and try before I share my thoughts. Think of it. Lineage definitions, data models, profiles, queries, dashboards, all done automatically. Or at least mostly automatically. What could we do then? Our focus shifts from creating artifacts to creating value. We do the things we've always claimed we want to do. So here are three categories of ideas and a few examples to get the conversation started. The first is facilitating the work of data consumers. We can automate insight discovery, optimize metric efficiency, and even our overall data estate. The second is expanding our understanding of data. For example, unstructured data content quality. Now, this is a big one that's barely been touched, greatly impacts AI, and can be greatly facilitated through AI. There's automated ontology discovery and infonomics for real. And third, we can pursue novel uses for data. Let your imagination run wild. We could create self-healing operational and analytical systems, automate business capability implementation and organizational introspection, and of course, data monetization. In 5 years, well, more like 3 years, data governance, information management, and analytics will look totally different and be practiced differently than today. AI is both the motivation and the accelerator. Most organizations don't have a solid enough foundation to pursue most of these right now. I mean, you can try, but the risks are great. And this transition period gives us a little time to get our act together. After all, it's better to prepare now than to have to play catch-up later, and I'm looking at you, AI readiness. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
The 8-Bit Consultants, advice in 256 characters or less, four times better than those 2-Bit Consultants. Today's question, how do you measure the quality of a data product?
The same way you measure the quality of anything, by how well it conforms to a standard. For data products, start with curated data that can be found and properly used without assistance, clearly assigned ownership, active support, and observed value.
The 8-Bit Consultants. If you have a question in 256 characters or less, leave a comment or write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
Data Poetry Slam, a data architect's lament. I drew the entities, I named the things, I mapped the bloodlines through 1,000 broken systems. I sifted the debris of decades of corporate neglect. I turned chaos into structure and taught the business how to find itself. Now the machine does it before lunch. It generates schemas while I refill my coffee. It writes the contracts, the rules, the lineage, the code. It smiles in probabilities and calls itself intelligence. Fine. I'll learn whatever comes after intelligence and beat it there too. Data Poetry Slam.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal advice. Counterthreaded is not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that might arise from the use of this podcast. The views expressed in this podcast may not be those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to replace professional medical advice.
In this episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed, we went halfway around the world, literally, to bring you Sam Spencer. He draws on experiences ranging from nursing to public service to entrepreneurship, advocating for a more assertive approach to governance that emphasizes accountability, ownership, and organizational responsibility. Our wide-ranging conversation covered ISO standards, metadata and asset management, as well as the parallels between data governance and quality improvement and other disciplines. Come back next time for the second part of our interview when Sam shares the details of an experiment he's running with the Australian government. And be sure to visit dataversity.net and use discount code ROCK15 to get 15% off your first purchase. Until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about Sam Spencer, at our website, rockbottomdatafeed.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a counter-threaded production, copyright 2026, all rights reserved.